We're beginning here 4 lines down at the top of Ayin Aleph Amud Aleph. The Gemara here is discussing the machlokah that we saw in the Mishnah between the Tana Kama and Rabbi Yossi Aglili, where the Tana Kama says that an nevela found inside of a behema, whether it's a kosher behema, whether it's a non-kosher behema, is not mitame tumat nevela. Because Rabbi Yossi Aglili saw a distinction between a behema Torah and a behema tumeya. That behema Torah, if the fetus is dead inside of it, then it doesn't convey tumah. Whereas if it's a fetus that's dead inside of a behemah tmeah, it is classified as a nevela and it does convey tumah. And then we brought, in the Chachamim, we learned from the Kal v'Chomer of Rav Chisda, that taught us that if it's matir for achila, then certainly it can protect against tumah. And then we had the hekesh between behemah Torah and behemah tmeah. On the other hand, for Rav Yossi Aglili, we had the pasuk of Rav Yitzchak, and later the pasuk of Rav Nachman by Yitzchak, which is that, okay, we had the pasuk by Korban Olivia Reid, that only behemah tmeah is mitamah, but a behemah Torah is not mitamah. And we said that manifests itself in a case of a fetus that is dead inside of the mother, and there'd be a difference there between a behemah tmeah and a behemah Torah. And again, evidence of that was brought from the pasuk of Rabbi Yitzchak, which also seems to indicate to us, based on the pasuk of Echol Oleich al Kapav, Bichol Chaya Holefet, inside of a Chaya, from between the two of those, we came to this conclusion. And then we had the question that Rabbi Yonatan spoke about with Ben Azai, which is, why does the Torah mention Behemah Torah, Behemah Tmeah, and a Chayat Tmeah, but never mentions a Chayat Torah with regards to Tumat Nevela? Ben Azai tried to answer him using the pasuk of Rabbi Yitzchak, but Rabbi Yonatan said you can't use that pasuk for that limud because it doesn't say Kol Chaya, it says Bichol Chaya, and therefore it's inside of the animal, not something about all the animals. And then Ben Azai responds to him and says, well, then what do you do? He says, well, I heard from Rabbi Yishmael the following braita. The following braita says that chaya bichlal behema, and behema bichlal chaya. That a chaya subsumed in a behema, behema subsumed in a chaya. And then the braita listed out all of the permutations, which is behema Torah, chaya Torah, behema tmeah, and chaya tmeah. Mentioned that it works in all of those scenarios. And now the Gemara is going through each of those permutations that we said. Chaya, bichlal, behema, minalan. How do we know that a chaya is subsumed under the term behema? Dichtiv, because the pasuk says in Parshat Re'eh, when it discusses the kosher animals, it says, zot ha-behema she-tochelu, sure, sek sabim, chule ayol, tzvi v'yachmor. In the list of animals, behemot, that are listed there, it includes the ayol, tzvi v'yachmor, which are chayot. And even though they're chayot, they're subsumed under a koteret, under a title that's called zot ha-behema. So you see the chaya is subsumed under the term behema. Ha-ketzad, chaya, b'klal behema. How does that work? It must be that chaya is subsumed under behema. Behema b'klal chaya, vice versa, the behema is subsumed under a chaya, min na'lan. How do we know that? Dichtiv, because it says in Parshat Shmini, zot ha-chaya asher tochlu, mikol ha-behema asher al ha-aretz. From the animals that you may eat, kol mafreset parsa, anything that has a split hoof. Over there it says, zot ha-chaya asher tochlu, mikol ha-behema, from the behemot. Kea keitzad, behema b'klal chaya. Gives you a koteret, a heading, a title called chaya, and then it speaks about a behema and not a chaya. So you see that they can be used interchangeably, that chaya is subsumed under behema, and behema is subsumed under chaya. They are, in a sense, almost synonymous, even though they have different meanings. So now, chaya Torah, bichlal behema Torah, what is the value of having a chaya Torah be subsumed under behema Torah? I mean, these are the different permutations that the Braita noted. That is the simanim. That's for the kosher simanim. In the Torah, it only gives you kosher simanim that are associated with behema. So now that chaya Torah is subsumed under behema Torah, then the same way that the simanim of behema Torah are chulitz kud and split hoofs, so too for chaya Torah, those are the same requirements. And that's why chaya is subsumed under behema. The Torah only gives simanim for a behema. Torah never gives them for a chaya. Chaya tmeya bichlal behema tmeya. Chaya tmeya is subsumed under the behema tmeya, the harba'a, for crossbreeding. It says, behemtecha lo tarbiya kilayim. Your animal, you may not crossbreed, but over there, the word that's used is behema. It never mentions the word chaya. How do you know that chaya cannot be crossbred? So that's because behema and chaya are used interchangeably. So just because it says behema by kilayim doesn't mean that it doesn't also mean kaya by kilayim. And the truth is, as Rashi points out over here, this is equally true for kosher animals as it is for non-kosher animals. The Gemara brings it as an example of a case where kaya tameya is subsumed under behemah tameya. But the truth is, you need this for behemah Torah as well. Because the behemah is the only word that's mentioned by kilayim, and a kaya Torah would have to be subsumed under behemah Torah. But as Rashi says, you need all of these for a number of items. But what Rashi says is, it's giving you one example. What it wants to do is within in each of the categories of the Braita, it wants to show you that there's a value to it. Doesn't mean that's an exclusive value, because you might need it for something else as well. Like in this case, where Chayat Me'a Bichlal Behemat Me'a Laharba'a, it's true of a Chayat Torah Bichlal Behemat Torah also. But we already have something for that. Chayat Torah Bichlal Behemat, we need it for Simanim. So we wanted to have something else that we could say here that would have included another category that we haven't mentioned.
As Tosafot points out, it's not literally we know these dinim from Chayat and Behemah, because we also learn out oath from Behem Tachalu Tarbiya Kilayim. So what it's saying is that these dinim are relevant by the crossover between Chayat and Behemah. It doesn't mean that these are the sources for these dinim. It's just that these dinim are relevant the interplay between Behemah and Chaya, and therefore it's a Chiddush that is learnt in that area. There's something of a Chiddush in each one of them, meaning each one of these statements about Chaya and Behemah is giving us additional information. And even though the information may not be learnt from that in of itself, nevertheless, it is relevant to the Chaya and the Behemah.
Behemah Tmeya Bechlav Chaya Tmeya Lekadarabi. The Behemah Tmeya is subsumed under Chayat Tmeya is for Rabbi's din that we mentioned yesterday, and now we're going to bring the Braita from Shavuot, which is the Tanya, Rabbi Omer Ekra, Ani Chaya. The Pasuk says Chaya. Behemah, Lama Nemra. Why did then you mention Behemah? Nemra kan Behemah Tmeya, Benemra Lahalan, Behemah Tmeya. So the reason to do that is because we have a Gezerah Shavah. It says Behemah Tmeya here in the Parshia of Korban Oleh V'Yoreid. And then it says later on, Behemah Tmeya, in Parshat Tzav, with regards to Tumat Kodoshim, Malahalan Tumat Kodesh. Just like over there, it's a reference to someone who is Tamei, who's consuming Kodesh. Avkan Tumat Kodesh. So to over here, it's referencing to someone who is Tamei, eating Kodesh. The problem that you have is that in the Parshia of Korban Oleh V'Yoreid, in Vayikra Hei, it says, O Nefesh Yertigav Achol Tavar Tamei. O b'nivlat chayat me'a, o b'nivlat behemat me'a. That's where Rabbi asks his question. If you mention nivlat chayat me'a, why do you have to mention behemat me'a? If behemah is subsumed under chayah, then why do you have to write behemah after you already wrote chayah? That's his question. O b'nivlat sheret tamei, v'ne'alam mimenu v'hu tamei v'ashem. It says there that he forgets about it and he's tamei v'ashem and he does something wrong. What he did wrong is never clarified over here. What is clear is it has something to do with tuma. Becoming tamei in of itself generally is not a problem. The problem is if you are tamei and then you do something. Question is, what are you doing over here that's problematic? The truth is, you could be eating truma. You could be doing something that the Torah mentions explicitly. So how do you know what it is? That's Rabbi's Gezerah Shavah. He says over here, the words behemah tmeya were extraneous. And therefore they reference us to the Parshia of Shlamim that's found in Parshat Tzav that deals with person that is Tamei, which is Nefesh. Ki tigav v'chol Tamei b'tumat adam o b'behemah Tmeya. That's the same behemah Tmeya. That's the Gzeres Shavah. O b'chol shetz Tamei b'achal mi'b'sar zevach ha'shlamim ha'shel Hashem nechrata nefesh ha'im me'amah. And you have a Achilat Kodesh. From here you learn that the problem in the Parshia of Korban Oleh V'Yoreid is Achilat Kodesh b'tumat aguf. Because of the Gzeres Shavah, Behemah Tmeya, Behemah Tmeya. So Rabbi uses the principle that a Behemah Tmeya is subsumed under Chayat Tmeya to get to his limud. Because that's why he has the extraneous language of Behemah Tmeya. And through that he makes a Gzeres Shavah between the Parshia of Korban Oleh V'Yoreid to the Parshia of Shlamim in Tzav to teach you that the violation in the Korban Oleh V'Yoreid is eating Kodesh V'tumat Haguf. Then Behemah Torah Bichlal Chayat Torah LeYitzirah. That a Behemah Torah is subsumed under a Chayat Torah that we need for Yitzirah. That is because in the Torah, it uses the term Vayitzer by a number of creations. One of which, of course, is man. Another one is, Vayitzer Hashem Elokim min Adama Kol Chayat HaSadeh. It also uses it by the chayot. The nafkamina is for someone who miscarries a shape or form that comes out of a woman. Is she deemed to be tamei because that shape or form is considered to be a fetus of sorts? And so Rabbi Meir's opinion is that there's a Torah Tavlad on anything that has the term Yitzirah associated with it. Just like Yitzirat Adam has the word Yitzirah used by it, then so too, any animal that has Vayitzer that's used by it would be subsumed under this category of Tumah for miscarriage. Vayitzer is used by V'chaya Torah, it's not used by V'hema Torah. So how do we know that it has application to V'hema Torah? That's because V'hema Torah is subsumed under V'chaya Torah. The truth is, as Rashi notes again here, you need it for that reasoning as well. Ella again, which each one of the principles of the Braita gives you one example. Doesn't mean that's the sole example. It could be that it has application to multiple of these items, but nevertheless, it's trying to give you an indication that each one of them has significance. It does that by showing you at least one item by each of them. That's not. If a woman miscarries a shape, a fetus that looks like a behema, a chaya, or an oaf, bent meim bentorim, whether they're non-kosher or kosher animals, im zachar, if it's a male, teishev lezachar, then she has tumat zachar. In the beginning of Parshat Tazria, it says that a woman who gives birth to a male, she has to sit 7 days of tumah, and then she has 33 days of tahara. If she gives birth to an ikeva, she has 14 days of tumah and 66 days of tahara. So now, if she miscarries one of these forms, and the form is a zakar, she's subject to tumat leida of a zakar. Im nikeva, if she gives birth to a female, teshev the nikeva, then she's subject to tumat leida of an ikeva. Eino yadua, if it's uncertain as to what the gender of the miscarriage is, teshev the zakar ule nikeva tibi Rabbi Meir. Then you have to keep the chumrot of zakar nekeva, which means that you will have 14 days of tumah, like a nekeva, because that's the chumrah of nekeva, versus the 7 days of the zakar, but you only get up to the 40th day in terms of tahara. So after you've done 14 days of tumah, the remaining 26 days will be of tahara to get you the 40 days of the zakar, but after that you won't have, you made tahara, even though a nekeva would have had tahara until the 80th day. So because you're taking the chumrot of both, you keep the higher span of tumah, which is 14 days, and then you have the smaller span of tahara, which means only until the 40th day. So that's what you do. But Rabbi Meir's position is premised on the fact that the word vayitzer is used by chayot, and therefore it has application to behemot as well, because behemah is subsumed under chaya. Chamim omrim, kol sheinu mitzurat adam einu vlad. The Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Meir and say that unless it has a form that looks human, then it's not mitamei tumat leida. So they disagree with Rabbi Meir. Ulrabonon. Now Rashi says that this is going back to the question of the Mishnah as to the source for the positions in the Mishnah. The Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi Aglili. So now we discuss Rabbi Yossi Aglili's source from Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Nachman Bar Yitzchak. So now the Chachamim, what do they do with the Pasuk that Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak brings on behalf of Rabbi Yossi HaGalili? Don't they have the same problem, which is nefesh kitiyah b'chol tamei, o b'nivlat chaya tamei, o b'nivlat beimat tamei, o b'nivlat sheretz tamei? Why is there a nevela from a beimat tamei mitama, u b'dora lo mitama? That was the diuk that they made. What are the Rabbanon do with that? Ulrabonon. So hi kra lomali. What do they do with it? Kulei the karabi hu da'ata. It all comes from Rabbi, and that's what we noted yesterday's daf, that when you have a pasuk that comes to teach you a piece of information, if the pasuk teaches you one new piece of information, it's worth all the repetition inside of the pasuk. So the repetition of the pasuk is not meaningful, except for the fact that you have the beimat me'ah, which is extraneous that Rabbi uses for his gezeirah shavah. So that's already a chiddush. Once you have that chiddush, anything else that's mentioned in the pasuk is just, it's repetitive, but unnecessary, but doesn't matter because you have the chiddush, and the chiddush is enough. What we learn with Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak is that
Even though Rabbi has that Kiddush, we have an additional Kiddush we can learn from that, and that is because Rabbi Yitzchak's pasuk that tells you that there is some difference between a Beimat Tmeya and a Beimat Torah. Based on that, we looked for a second Kiddush in that pasuk. Coming to say, all we learn from it is the one Kiddush, which is the fact that you have Zer Shava from Korban Ulevi Oreid over to the Korban Shlamim to teach you that we're speaking about Tumat Kodesh. But other than that, there's nothing else to learn from the pasuk, and they don't have this limud of Rav Yossi Aglili. That's the way Rashi learns it. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Gershom learns of the Chachamim over here. His Gersh is the following. Anichal Rabbi Meir, the Gemara makes sense according to Rabbi Meir. Damar amapelet min beima chaya ba'ov tmeya mibayla lehaikra. Then you need the pasuk of nivlat chaya tmeya o v'nivlat beima tmeya leyitzira. Because then you use it for yitzira. Elo l'rabbonon damre kosheinu mitzurat adam inu vlad veinu tmeya. So then haikra the mikish nivlat chaya tmeya leneivlat beima tmeya lomali. Why do I need a pasuk that creates a hekesh between a nevela of a chayat me'ah and a nevela of a behemat me'ah? Why do I need a hekesh between the two of them? So my answer is, kule the karabi to adato. That comes because of the din of Rabbi. Klomar, ha'ikrab in nevelat chayat me'ah l'rabbanon, lo mi bayiluhu li'itzira. Lo hekesh chayat me'ah l'behemat me'ah. The only reason for the hekesh between the chayat me'ah and the behemat me'ah is for Rabbi, for tzorech of kodoshim, to teach you the din that we're speaking about the Kodoshim over here, not because of the din of the Tzura Tavlad. So the Rabbeinu Gershom reads the Rabbonon, not referring to the Rabbonon of our Mishnah like Rashi, but rather the Rabbonon of the Chachamim over here. Since they don't need it for Rabbi Meir's reasoning, then what do they do with the Pasuk? And the answer in the end is that they use it all for Rabbi's din. And you can see the same thing in the Balei Tosafot, who asked that similar question on Rashi as to why would you wait to speak about the Chachamim of Yosef Galili all the way to the end over here? Why wouldn't you address this before? The fact that they waited at the end makes it sound like it's a reference to the Mishnah we just brought, Machloket Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, questioning what the Rabbanon do about the last part of the Braita, which is Beima Torah Bichlal Chaya Torah, since they don't need it for Rabbi Meir's reasoning. And the answer in the end is that they use it all for Rabbi's din. Meaning that they only use it for one of the two purposes of Chaya Bichlal Beima, and that's only in the Tzad Tmeya, not on the Tzad Tehora. Rashi will answer, first of all, it says Rabbonon over here and not Chachamim. In the Mishnah, it's Chachamim. That's number one. Number two is, the whole bright that was brought here, because it was speaking about Rabbi, that led into the exchange between Rabbi Yonatan and Ben Azai, that had to deal with the issue of Chaya and Behema. And then we came all the way through this Braita. Now we finished dealing with the Braita. We go back to the original topic, and that's why it's found over here. All right, next Mishnah. Aisha shemet vlada b'toch me'ah. A woman who has a fetus that has died inside of her. Pashta chayat yadav in agabo. And then the midwife stuck her hand in and touched the baby that was inside. Achayat me'ah tumat shiva. She's now t'me'ah tumat hamet. She touched a dead body, and now she's t'me'ah tumat hamet. Vaisha Torah Achiyetzeh Vlad. On the other hand, the woman is Torah until the blood exits her body. Now that could be for either of one of two reasons. That's either because she has what's called Tumat Beta Starim. Tumat Beta Starim means that something that is encapsulated or inside, you can't have Tumah from something that comes into contact with it. So here the woman is coming into contact with the blood internally, inside of herself, and therefore that's not considered to be a type of Magal that generates Tumah. Or it could be what's called Tumah Blu'ah. Tumah that's subsumed inside of the body, then that Tumah no longer functions or acts like Tumah. We're going to see in a second, the Gemara is going to discuss this, and then we'll discuss the reasoning why that is true. But for one of those two reasons, the fetus that's found inside the woman over here is not Mitameh the woman, even though it is Mitameh the midwife that touches it. Now, Tosafot, using the parallel Gemara in Bechorot, points out that the woman is only Torah here until the fetus exits when the size of the head is very small. But if the size of the head is bigger, then once you have Tikata Keber, once the womb opens and the birthing process begins, then she is Tmeya automatically as well. You don't have to wait for it to exit. So those was just reconciling between our mission over here and the view of the Gemara in Bechorot and saying that there's an Ukimta in this Mishnah that the head of the fetus has to be very small in this case, in order for it not to be Mitameh the woman until it actually exits, until there's actually a birth. Or inami, it's like the shita and olot that says that there's no tumah until there is a full leida. Although you can see the Reb Kiva Eger pointing to the Rosh Mishatz, who thinks that the two Tanaim being quoted by Balei Tosafot are the same Tano. And therefore, in the Mishnah in Olot, the Rosh spends a lot of time trying to come to an understanding that reconciles between the Mishnah and the Gemara here, the Mishnah in Olot, as well as the Gemara in Bechorot. Amar Rabba, k'shem shetum'ah blu'ah ena mitama'ah, just like tum'ah that is consumed or internal to the individual cannot convey tum'ah, kach tara blu'ah ena mitama'ah. So too, something that's tahor that is consumed or ingested by the individual will not become tamei from some external tum'ah. Tum'ah blu'ah minolan. How do we know that tum'ah blu'ah works? How do we know that if you ingest something that is tamei, then inside the individual, it will not convey tumah. Dichtiv, because the pasuk says, "Va'ochel minivlata yichabes bigadav." One who eats from the nevela has to launder, wash his clothing. Milo askinan, isn't the scenario over here dachal samuch l'shkiat hachama? You consume the item right before sunset. Vekamai rachmana tahor. And the Torah says, if you go to the mikveh before sunset, and then the sun sets, you are tahor. You now have tvila. Herev Shemesh, those are the two things that are required to remove what's called Tumat Yom, or Tumat Nevela. So here you came into contact with the Nevela, and then you consume that Nevela. Then you go right to the mikveh, and then the sun sets, and you're Tahor. Right now, that Tumat Nevela is inside of you, it's still a Nevela. How come it's not impacting you? How come it's not making you Tameh? So the answer the Gemara is proposing is that's because it's Tumat Blua. Since it's Tumah Blua, since it's inside of you, it does not convey Tumah. And that would be our source. And as Rashi points out, that this has to be Tumah Blua, not Maga Beta Starim, because we're speaking about Nevela over here. And a Nevela is Mitameh, not only B'Maga, but even B'Masa. And therefore, Tumah Beta Starim protects you when you're talking about a problem of Maga. But it doesn't protect you when you're dealing with Masa, because you're still carrying the item. And even if you're carrying the item in a place that's not visible, that doesn't protect you from the tumah being conveyed. And so over here, if the reason that you were tahor was because of magab beit hasterim, you'd still be tameh in this case because you're still carrying the item. So that means that it must be that the reason you're tahor over here is because it's tumah blu'ah, and that's the proof that tumah blu'ah doesn't have an impact on the individual. And even though, as the Balei Tosafot point out, that the Gemara uses this pasuk not to teach about achilat nevela, but rather about magah nevela. And the Achilah over here only teaches you the size of the Nevela that you need in order to become Tameh. And so therefore it's not even speaking about eating a Nevela, it's speaking about contact with the Nevela. How can you bring a proof from this Pasuk? And that's what it says in the end, Mikom Makom, Ein Mikra Yotzei Midei Pshuto. Even though that's the drush of the Pasuk, you have to look at the Pashup Shad of the Pasuk. The Mashma, the Tihera Katub, et Ochel, Mitabel, Veriv Shimsho. The Pasuk sounds like someone who ate Tumah. And then went to the mikveh, and the sun set that they would be tahor. Even though that's not the drush of the pasuk, but that's the pashtura pasuk. And from the pashtura pasuk, that's what you would learn, and that gives us this proof of tumah blu'ah. Where it says, v'dilma shani hotam, lochazia leger. Maybe the reason over there that it is no longer a problem is not because the tumah blu'ah does not convey tumah. Maybe it's because it's no longer ra'ui to be eaten by a ger. We have thresholds with regards to the tumah, which allow, first of all, something to convey or have tumah, and number two, maintain that tumah. So for instance, by tumat nevela, there's an association between the ger and the nevela, because the ger gets the nevela, meaning that a Jew can't eat the nevela. So the Torah tells us that you give it to the ger toshav, or sell it to the nafri. The Gemara discusses whether you have to take that literally, or it means that's the order of preference, but you can sell it to either or give it to either. But the Gemara sees from that connection between ger and nevela that the threshold for something to be classified as a nevela and have tumat nevela is it has to be ra'oi l'achilat ger. It has to be something that a ger would eat. So that everybody agrees to, that in order for it to start out the tumat nevela, it has to be ra'oi the ger. The question is, once it has tumat nevela, when does it lose that tumat nevela? At one point, is it no longer a nevela? So there's a machloka we're going to see in 1 second, which is the threshold ger, which means that if it's no longer ra'oi la ger, it's no longer considered a nevela, or does it have to be that it's no longer ra'oi la achilat kelev, it's no longer ra'oi for a dog to eat, and then it loses its shame tumah. So there's a higher threshold, at least to become Tameh initially, or to have Tumat Nevela initially. Once it is already Tameh Tumat Nevela, how do you shake that Tumat Nevela from the item? So according to one opinion, if it's not a Roi L'Achilat Ager, it's gone. According to the other opinion, if it's not Roi L'Achilat Kelev, that's when it's gone. So that's what the Gemara says here. Anicha L'Rabbi Yochanan, according to Rabbi Yochanan, believes that a Tameh Tumat Nevela remains Nevela until Achilat Kelev, Damar, Achad Zo Ad Kelev, that he says either one of them, until it's not Roi L'Achilat Kelev, still has Tumah, Shapir, then he can learn it from this pasuk. Because even after you ingested the item is still Ra'oi L'Achilat Kelev, means that it still has Tumah Nevela associated with it, yet you are not Tameh. The reason for that is because of Tumah Bluah. That's the suggestion of the Gemara, and according to Rabbi Yochanan, it works well. Elo Labar Podo, Damar Tumah Chamura Lager. That when it comes to a higher level of Tumah, it only remains and retains that level of Tumah if it's Roi Lager. Tumah Kala, the lower forms of Tumah, Ad the Kelev, is until it's Roi L'Achilat Kelev. Mishom Delo Chazi Lager Hu. But the reason that it no longer has a din of Tumat Nevela is because it's no longer Ra'oi for the Ger. Rashi says over here with regards to Tumah Chamura and Tumah Kla, Rashi says that Tumah Chamura is that Nevela's ability to convey Tumah to be Metameh Adam, and Tumah Kla means that it only has the ability to be Metameh Ochlim Mashkim, which means that it's a Rishon Tumah, it's not a Ava Tumah. So he views here Nevela having different stages of Tumah, which is that it's an Ava Tumah, which is Metameh Adam, and then there's a stage of Tumah Tochlim, where it's only Metameh Ochlim Mashkim, but it cannot be Metameh Adam. And so it can lose the Tumat Nevela of being Metameh Adam. That threshold, according to Bar Podo, is Achilat Ager. The threshold for it no longer having Tumat Ochlim at all, or being able to convey Tumat Ochlim, that's at the threshold of Ra'oi L'Achilat Kelev. But according to him, once you lose the status of Ra'oi L'Achilat Ager, it no longer conveys Tumat on Adam. So maybe the reason why the item that is inside of you is no longer conveying Tumah is not because of Tumah Bluah, but rather because a Ger wouldn't need it. Since a Ger wouldn't need it, it no longer has that higher level of Tumah, it can't be Mitameh Adam anymore. And that maybe that's the reason you can go to the mikveh right after you eat the Mela, right before Shkiat HaChama, right before sunset. So from there, you wouldn't have a proof, according to Bar Podo. That's the way Rashi explains Tumah Chamura and Tumah Kala over here. In the Gemara in Bechorot, Rashi says that Tumah Chamura is that it's Mitameh B'maga U'B'masa, that it's Mitameh not only with touching, but even carrying it. Tumah Kala is that it's only Mitameh B'maga, not B'masa, which is a similar expression about the same item, the levels of Tumah within the same item. The truth is that you could have just viewed the Tumah Chamura and Tumah Kala here as being the difference between Tumat Nevela and Tumat Ochlim. The item itself, when it has Tumat Nevela, is also subject to Tumat Ochlim, because it's Ochel. And so therefore, even when you lose the Tumat Nevela, you still have the possibility of it contracting Tumat Ochlim that are associated with this item. And you can just view Chamura as Chamura being the inherent Tumah of Tumat Nevela, and Tumah Kala as being the possibility of it contracting Tumat Ochlim because it was an Ochel. And so it has both of those Tumot, and just that Tumat Nevela disappears at the threshold of Achilat Ager, and Tumah Kala, Tumat Ochlim, only disappears at the threshold of Achilat Kelev. So according to Bar Podo, you can't use this pasuk as a proof, because Bar Podo thinks that it's already not Ro'oi once it's not Ro'oi L'Achilat Ager. So Mar says, Nehi D'lo Chazia B'fanav, Shalom B'fanav Mizia Chazilei. If the Ger saw you regurgitate the food, spit the food back out, he would not eat it. It'd be so disgusting to him that he would never eat it. So then it's not Ro'oi L'Achilat Ager. But the truth is, if the Ger never saw you regurgitate the food or spit the food back up, he wouldn't be dissuaded from eating it. It's possible that he would eat it because he has no idea about the history of this item. So the truth is that it is Ra'oi L'Achilat Ager. A Ger could eat this item, may even eat this item. And it's just that if he sees where it came from, or he knows where it came from, he might not eat it. But that doesn't make it She'enu Ra'oi L'Achilat Ager. In truth, it is. And so therefore, even according to Bar Podo, it's still Ra'oi L'Achilat Ager. It still has Tumat Nevela. And the reason that the Tumat Nevela doesn't affect you is because of Tumah Blu'ah. And that's our source for the fact that Tumah Blu'ah does not affect the individual. The Gemara says, Ashkachan Tumah Blua. So now you've shown me the source for the fact that something that is Tamei inside of the individual will not affect them. Tohra Blua Minolon. How do I know that the other statement of Rabbah is true, which is that if you have something that's Tohor inside of you, that it's not affected by outside stimuli of Tumah? Kal v'chomer is a logical extension. Umakli cheres, when it comes to earthenware utensils, hamukaf tzamit patil, that has a seal on the top, it has a cover that is sealed onto it, sheinu matzil ala tumah shebetocha milatameh, doesn't stop tumah that's inside the earthenware utensil from affecting things that are outside. And that is because, damar bar, tumah ritzutza, if you have tumah that's contained in a very small area, and it doesn't have an oil that's surrounding it, which would limit the scope of where the tumah would spread, then the tumah is bokat vola adarakia. It breaks out of there, and it makes anything above it tamei. So anybody who walks above it, flies above it, does anything above it will be tamei tumat ohel, because it's contained within an item that's not providing an ohel. If there is an ohel, then the tumah is limited to the area of the ohel itself, because now you have something that stops it from continuing to extend itself. But if you have nothing covering it, nothing creating an ohel over it, then the tumah continues to rise, adarakia, and anybody or anything that passes over it will become tameh. So that's true by an earthenware utensil that is whole and has a cover or seal on it. Even though when it has tumah inside of it, it doesn't stop the tumah from breaking out. Matzila tarash mitochol min tameh. If there's something tahor found inside of this earthenware utensil, and it's in an oil mate, it will not affect whatever inside in there. Whatever inside in there will remain tahor. That is called mukaf samid patil. It is an earthenware utensil that is sealed in place. So now, Adam, a person, shematzila tumah shimtocho militamei, a person which we just saw, if they swallow tumah, the tumah then has no impact. It doesn't break out of the individual. It doesn't spread outside of the individual. The person stops tumah from spreading. Certainly he should be able to protect whatever is inside of him from becoming tameh. By an earthenware utensil that is sealed, it is successful at blocking tumah from entering. It is unsuccessful at stopping tumah from breaking out of it, exposing other things to it. But a person who does have the capacity to limit the tumah and have the tumah remain inside of them where it has no impact, if they can do that by tumah, then certainly they should be able to protect something that is tahor from tumah coming and affecting that item. Mar says, Malik Licheris, Shekain Ein Mitameh Migabol. Maybe the reason Klicheris protects over here is because there's tumah doesn't affect the outside. Klicheris can only become tameh internally. It can't become tameh externally. So maybe the reason that it works over here to protect that which is inside of it from tumah is because it's not mekabel tumah from its external side. Tomar ba'adam shimetameh migabo. So now a person doesn't have that. They become tameh no matter where they come into contact with the item. And so maybe that kula, klicheres, is what actually protects that which is tahor inside versus the human being that doesn't have that and therefore he can't protect whatever is tahor inside. Where it says, Ata anan migabo kamrinan, mitocho kamrinan. Our whole limud over here has nothing to do with the external side of the earthenware utensil. It has to do with the internal side of the earthenware utensil as well as the internal side of the person. Both of these issues are about the tumah that's inside the klicheres and the tumah that's inside the adam. And that's what we're contrasting. We're saying tumah inside of a klicheres breaks out, whereas tumah inside of an adam does not break out. That's the start of our kol v'chomer. And then we go on to tara. If the klicheres could protect against tumah coming in, then certainly adam should be able to protect against tumah coming in. And by tocho adraba, the logic dictates the other way. Klicheres chamor. Klicheres is a big chumra. Shekein mitameh me'aviro. Because it accepts tumah, not just in contact, but even if you're in the airspace. But a human being doesn't have that. So by a kli cheres, where the internal tumah affects it, even by viro, even if it doesn't come into contact with it, and it doesn't protect against tumah escaping from it, in that scenario, that same kli cheres protects against tumah coming into it and affecting something that's tahor. So an adam that doesn't have all those problems when there's tumah inside of them because the tumah is blue ah and doesn't affect anything else, then certainly in a case where they have something to whore inside of them, they should be able to protect the tara of that item. And even though, as the Bali Tosafot point out, in the end, you do end up dealing with migabo, because the reason that the Kli Keres might protect that which is inside of it when it's sealed is for exactly that reason, that it can't become tamei migabo. And maybe that is a kula. The Tosafot says, the Gemara's answer is that the kavachomer is running or driving from this, that a Kli Keres mukab tamid patzil, that the gabo matzil, where its gav can't protect it against the tumah escaping from it, yet it does protect it against tumah entering into it. Adam that matzil from tumah emanating from him, inside of himself, and certainly she able to protect against tumah entering into him. So in essence, the Bali Tosafot are saying that the kal v'chomer is from the gabo of the kli cheres to the tocho of the individual. It's not from the gabo of the kli cheres to the gabo of the individual. And therefore, the kula of the gabo aspect is not really meaningful here, because we're speaking about the tocho of the individual. And when it comes to the tocho of the individual, over there, the kli cheres actually has a tzad chumrah, which is that it's even mitamei ma'aviro. So if I compare the gav of the kli cheres, which is unsuccessful at stopping tumah from emanating, but protective against an entering, then the tocho of the individual, which is successful at protecting it from emanating, certainly should be protective in its ability to prevent it from entering. And then you don't have this problem of the kula of gabo by kli cheres influencing the kal v'chomer, because it's not from the gabo of the kli cheres to the gabo of the adam. Although there are others like the Ran who suggest that the Gemara's question of mi gabo is not a question as to the fundamental reason that there is protection from the kli cheres, because it's not mikabo tumah from the outside mi gabo, but rather that mi gabo is just a siman of a kula. And the Gemara's response to that is that Tocho has a huge Chumrah in it. And so therefore you can't claim that the reason that the Kli Cheres is protective is because of that Kula Migabo, because it has a much greater Chumrah Mi Tocho. And that Chumrah would outweigh or equalize the Kula of Gabo, as well as the fact now that you're dealing with the Tocho of the individual. Over there, the Kli Cheres is much more Chamur, and therefore the Kal V'Chomer can stand. It's now the Gemara says, Ashkan V'Lua Dilamala, Balua Dilamata Minolon. So the Gemara says now, if someone ingests something, they swallow it, from the posuk that speaks about Achila, now we have a proof that Tuma Blua doesn't affect them. And therefore, Tuma Blua is associated with ingestion. How do we know if something was entered from the anus of the individual to the point where they push it back up into the individual, and then it's found now inside the individual? As Rashi notes, through a pipe, so it doesn't touch them directly, externally, which would have caused a magatumah with that item. But instead, it's put through a pipe, which either avoids the direct contact, or even if it makes the pipe tamei, it will only be a rishon tumah, which cannot be mitamei adam. How do we know that that works like tumah blua? It says, kal v'chomer. Mala mala sheino seikul. By the mouth, where one consumes it, and it's not being digested, matzil, yet it's still able to protect against the tumah blua. The mata she'ose ikul, down below in the intestines where the digestion happens, eino din shematzil, certainly it should be able to protect against the tumah coming out of this individual, and it will be considered tumah blua. Gemara says, klum ose ikul lamata eleyadei lamalo. Wait a minute. The way that the digestion happens starting from the mouth and the mechanical digestion of the mouth, and then the swallowing that takes it down into the digestive juices, if that's the case, then why is it that you would have a kal v'chomer over here? Ingesting it or putting it through the mouth is a part of the digestive process. If that's the case, then why would you say a kal v'chomer if you enter it from down below, that it should also be classified as mi'ukal versus that which comes through the mouth? Gemara says, afilo achi ikul d'lamato rav, that even though starting from the mouth and swallowing it is the natural way to ingest it, and that brings it into the digestive system, or the beginning of digestion at least starts in the mouth, nevertheless, the digestion of the intestines down below is much more significant than the digestion of the mouth. And for that reason, you can make the kal v'chomer because of that stronger ikul that is associated with the intestines or entering in the food from the mato. And so for that reason, both of them are considered to be balua, whether it's ingested or it was entered through the rectum of the individual. Now, Rashi claims that the reason that balua is not conveying tuma is for what the Gemara says right here is equal digestion. That once the item goes into the individual, the equal, the digestive process begins. And that digestive process then makes it that it's no longer classified as being able to convey tuma because it's under a process of quote-unquote destruction at this point because it's in the equal. That's Rashi's reasoning for why tuma blua works. On the other hand, the Rashi Mishnah suggests that the reason tuma blua works is because tuma blua is batel to the goof that is containing it. You have the goof adam and you have the small item inside of it. And the goof adam is much more of a significant entity versus the item that they consumed. And therefore, when you consume the item or you swallow the item, it will be batel to the goof. And since it's batel to the goof, it's no longer relevant, it's no longer conveying tuma. Or, the way that the Rambam formulates it is, that the goof adam, or any goof chai, provides a chatzitza, provides some sort of barrier between the tuma and the external world. And for that reason, the tuma cannot convey tuma. Now the Gemara says, ashkachan blua da adam. Now we found that if a person ingests something, tuma is suspended when it's in the individual. How do I know that if an animal consumes tuma, that again there, the tuma will remain inside the animal and not affect anything outside of it because it's classified as tuma blua? And a person that can become tamei while they're alive, they still are able to protect against tuma that's inside of them from affecting other items. An animal that cannot become tamei while it's alive. While it's alive, a behemah can never become tamei. It's only a dead animal that either becomes ochel, and therefore can be mekabel tumat ochlim, or it's a nevela, and therefore it has its inherent tuma that's associated with it. But before that point in time, it can't be mekabel tuma. So then, ain't no din shetatzil ba'balua? Certainly then, it should be able to protect against balua. Ma la'adam shekein tzarech shiyah b'bayit ha'minugah. Wait a minute, Adam has a chumrah that when they go into a house that has tzorat, that unless they wait there, they will not be mitamei their bigadim. On the other hand, tomar bebeimah shenatzricha shiyat baita minuga versus the beimah that does not require that amount of tarrying to come to me. Gemara says, beimah deinatzricha shiyat bebeita minuga, the mayhukhata. What is the locha that's relevant that an animal doesn't need to tarry inside of the house for there to be tuma? About what halacha is this said? Lekelim shagaba. It has to do with the utensils on its back. The animal itself is not mekabel tuma. The animal itself enters into that house that has tzorat. It doesn't matter because they're not mekabel tuma. What does matter, what is in fact, is whatever they're carrying on their back or whatever they're wearing, whatever kelim they have, those will be infected by the tuma. Those items become immediately tamei. And you don't need any tarrying for them to become tamei. Adam nami lo bayit. In that category, man also doesn't need to wait in order to become tamei. It's none. Because if a mishnah nichnas lebayit haminuga, someone enters into a house that has tzarat, v'kelav al tekav, and his clothing or his utensils are on his shoulder, v'sandalav v'tabutav v'yadav, and he's carrying his shoes, and he's carrying his rings or his signet in his hand. Hu v'hein tmei miyad. When you enter into the house that has tzarat, he and everything that he's carrying with him are tamei immediately. He's wearing his clothes. The sandalabaraglav and his shoes are on his feet. The tabutabetzvao and his ring is on his finger. Hu tamei miyad. He is tamei immediately. And they are tahor until you carry inside the house the amount of time it takes to eat. Kedei achilat pras. Pras means half. Half of a standard loaf of bread. Pat chitim, made out of wheat. Velo pat sorim, and not made out of barley. Mesav vochel, when he is leaning down and eating, biliftan, with some sort of accompaniment. What we're speaking about here is normal type of eating. How long is kedei achilat pras? The amount of time it takes to eat half a loaf. The size of a full loaf, according to Rashi, is 8 beitzim. And therefore, achilat pras, eating half of that is 4 beitzim. Whereas for the Rambam, the full loaf is 6 beitzim. And therefore, the pras, half of that is 3 beitzim. So for Rashi, 4 beitzim is the kedei achilat pras. For the Rambam, 3 beitzim is kedei achilat pras. So now you have to tarry inside of the Bayit HaMenugah in order to affect the clothing or any other item that you are wearing. That is because the pasuk tells us that a person, ha'ochel, whoever eats v'bayit ha'menugah, that they are not only subject to tumat, they're also subject to tumat bigadim. And Chazal darshim, with regards to this, that ha'ochel v'bayit yichabesit bigadav, does not mean literally you have to eat in the house, but rather you have to wait there shir achila. You have to tarry in the house the amount of time it would have taken you to eat. And so now, this din that you're telling me that there's a differentiation between Behema and Adam that's going to undermine our Kol V'Chomer, that difference doesn't really exist. And that's because in the Mishnah that we just read, the person carrying utensils and the Behema carrying utensils have the same din, which is as soon as they enter, it becomes Tameh. Only where you're wearing the clothing and wearing those items, that when you enter, there is a delay between the time that you become Tameh and that they become Tamei and require kibbutz bigadim. That is, you become Tamei immediately, the clothing only becomes Tamei after you stay there, kidei achilat pras. But then you see from that, that with regards to a Behema and Adam, there's no distinction between them when they're carrying the clothing in. It's only when they are wearing the clothing that it matters. That's what the Gemara says over here. When the animal goes in with any clothing, it is not wearing the clothing, it is carrying the clothing. And that's what Rashi says over here. Animals don't wear clothes. They carry whatever it is that they have on them. It's a burden on them. It is not considered or classified as wearing them wearing clothing. The Baalei Tosafot are bothered by this because we have prakim upon prakim in the Gemara and Shabbat that speak about what is mutar for an Adam to go out with on Shabbat and what is asur. And the major distinction between them is if it's an item that the animal wears normally, it's considered to be quote-unquote clothing of the animal, then that's not a problem for the animal to walk around with that on Shabbat. On the other hand, if the item is a masui, it's a burden on the animal, then you would not be able to take the animal out carrying it on Shabbat. So now, over here, why are you telling me that whatever the behemoth wears is not considered to be a malbush, when the Gemara in Shabbat recognizes that there are things that are malbushim? So Tosfot says in the end, V'yesh lamar, the behemah afilu kelim shi levusha, Kashib ka'al gaba. So even though it can be enough to get you out of the problem of carrying on Shabbat, because it's considered to be, quote-unquote, a malbush of the Behema, nevertheless, when it's wearing the clothing, it's the equivalent of it's being on the back of the animal, and not a wearing of the clothing, by Tumat Negaim, because the animal, by Negaim, is not Mekabel Tumat. So therefore, it's not considered to be someone who is relevant in the world of Negaim, that they are Tamei, and their Begadim will become Tameim. Since the clothing doesn't become Tameah because of the animal, but rather because of the Begadim. So by definition, all Begadim in the world of Negaim for a Behema are considered to be Al-Gabah and not a Malbush. And for that reason, over here, it becomes Tamei Miyad. So now we have the source for what Rabba said, both by Adam and by Behema. We have the source for the fact that Tumah Blu'ah does not impact. From that, we made a Kal V'Chomer that something Tahor, Torah Blu'ah, is also protected. And from Adam, we extended it to Behema. And now the Gemara says, Amarova Tarvayu Taninu. What's the Chiddush of Rabba over here? Both of the statements of Rabba are Mishnayot. Tumat, Blu'ah, Tanina. The fact that Tumat that is ingested is classified as Tumat Blu'ah and doesn't have impact. And we learn from a Mishnah, Tarah Blu'ah Tanina. The fact that something Torah inside of you is protected from Tumah affecting it is also a Mishnah. As Tosfot points out, the question is really only from the Tara Blu'ah side and not from the Tumah Blu'ah side. And that's because even Rabba agrees that Tumah Blu'ah is a given and he's only trying to extend that to Tara Blu'ah. So the real question is from the fact that Tara Blu'ah is already noted in a Mishnah when he's trying to extend that from a Kal V'Chomer. Tumah Blu'ah, the fact that the Tumah Blu'ah doesn't have impact, it's not. We have the Mishnah in Mikvot, Balata Bat Tmeah. Person swallowed a ring that is Tameh. Tovel, Vochel B'Trumato. He can go to the Mikvah and eat Trumah that night. So we don't worry about the fact that there's a Tameh ring inside of the individual. It's exactly the case of Tumah Blu'ah. Hekiah, if he somehow spits it up or regurgitates it, Tmeah B'Tamato. The item remains Tameh, and now it's Mitameh the Adam. Tara Blu'ah Tanina, We learned the fact that something that's tahor inside is protected. That's not balata bat tahora. Person consumes, ingests a ring that is tahor. Menichnas lo'omate. And then after that, he goes into an olamate, which makes him tamate, tumata mate, because they're the same ol as a mate. V'izah, v'shana, v'taval. He does the azah, the parah, duma on the third day. V'shana, does it again on the seventh day. V'taval, then goes to the mikvah. V'hikiyah, and then he regurgitates it, pops it out. Harehi kema shehaita. Exactly like it was the way before, meaning it remains tahor. And even though it didn't go through the process of tahara, nevertheless, it is tahor, which indicates to you that it never became tamei. So here's a Mishnah showing you that tahara blua is not impacted by tma from the external side. So Mar says, kika marabba kagon shabala shtei tabaot. Rabba's chiddush is that when you swallow two rings, achat tmeya v'achat tahora, one of them that has tuma, one of them that does not have tuma. So lo mitamele mitama the tahora. That the one that is tamei does not make the one that is tahor tamei. So as Rashi explains over here, additional information that's been provided by Rabbah is the fact that the Mishnah only would have taught you the fact that tumat beit hasdarim is not mitamei. And that is because tumat beit hasdarim is a contact internally in a non-visible section and it doesn't convey tumat. And over here, we're dealing with tumat amet. And tumatamate is mitamei b'maga and not b'masa. And because of that, only maga would have been impactful. The fact that nothing happened shows you that there's no tumat maga here. Or in essence, there is tumat beit hasdarim, and therefore the tumat is not conveyed. What it doesn't teach you is that tumat blu'a is also not problematic. And that's what Rabbah comes to add for us, that the reasoning behind these mishnayot is not tumat beit hasdarim, rather, tuma blu'a, and that's why he brings the example of the two rings. Because that's exactly the nafkamina between tumat maga and tuma blu'a. Which is that tumat maga is something that you can't see, therefore there's no maga. But over here where the two rings are together inside, they can see each other, there is tuma maga there, then they should make each other tamei. The only reason it might not work is if tumah blu'a is not a problem. And that's what Rabbah's chiddush is according to Rashi. And even though over here we're speaking about something that became tamei, tumah tamei that he ate, and we have the principle, cherev harehu kechalal, that any metallic object that accepts tumah from a mate becomes like the mate itself. Nevertheless, Rashi says over here that she'ein masa elamisha tumah yotza mimenu. There's only tumat masa from something that exudes tuma, like a mate, or a nevela, or mayanot zav, aval tamei mate, ava pishu ava tuma, ein lo masa. Something that came into contact with a mate, even though he's an ava tuma, he doesn't have tumat masa. And as Rashi acknowledges over here, that tumat beit hasdarim does not allow for tuma through maga, but does allow for tuma through masa. It just says there's just no masa that's relevant in these mishnayot. So, for that reason, over here, you could have explained the Mishnayot as being Tumat Beit Hasdarim, and then you don't have the Chiddush of Tumat Blua. That's what Rabbah comes to add, that not only is this not Tamei because of Tumat Beit Hasdarim, but you might have thought it's really not Tamei because of Tumat Blua, and that's the Chiddush of Rabbah according to Rashi. The Baalei Tosafot argue on both of these principles of Rashi. The first of which is that Rashi says that when you have this metallic item, this ring that touched a mate, and you swallow it, there's only tumat maga, not tumat masa. Tosafot disagrees with that and says, cherev harehu kechalal, like Rashi noted. You're on the same level as the mate, and therefore you have the same character traits as the mate. And that means that you have tumat maga and tumat masa. And therefore, if you explain the Mishnayot as being the reason you're not tamei is because tumat beit hasdarim, it wouldn't help you. Because there is tumat masa over here. If there is tumat masa, then they can become tamei if it was just a tour of tumat beit hasdarim. That shows you the Mishnayot must be speaking about tumat blua, and that can't be the chiddush of Rabbah about tumat blua. And that gives Tosafot argue on Rashi's second principle, which is that the Mishnayot are talking about tumat beit hasdarim, and Rabbah is talking about tumat blua. He says that can't be. The Mishnayot are speaking about tumat blua, and so is Rabbah speaking about tumat blua. And therefore, the Baalei Tosafot, the chiddush over here of Rabbah, is the time of the matnita mishum baluahu. The reason that the Mishnah says that you are tahor over here is because it was balua. The The Chiddush of Rabba is two rings versus one ring. Dimi Madnita Noishmeinin Lei Daha Avagab Dutma Bula Lo Mitama. All the Mishnayot teach you is that that which is internal to the person doesn't affect the environment, and the environment doesn't affect the item that is inside. It means that the item that is tamei, that's inside the individual, won't convey tumah to things outside. And vice versa, things that are tamei on the outside can't affect the ring that is balua. That's the only information we have from the Mishnayot. The Chiddush of Rabba is that that's not only true between the inside and the outside, but even for two things on the inside, which means you have two tabot, one tamei, one tor, and they're internal to the individual, they still cannot convey tumah between each other. And that's the Chiddush of Rabba. The tumah blua is so powerful that not only does it protect the environment from what is inside, or that is inside from the environment, it protects two items that are inside. And that's the Chiddush of Rabba. And the Tosva goes on to explain that Rabba knows this from the pasuk that says when you consume the tumah, you're able to go to the mikveh and then eat the tumah immediately afterwards. And since you can eat the tumah immediately afterwards, that shows you that we don't worry about the tumah Torah being inside you at the same time as the ring or the item that you ate, the nevela tmeah, that's inside of you. And that shows you that two items inside also are subject to tumah blua, and they're not mitameh each other. So that is the Chiddush, according to the Baalei HaTosafot, of the statement of Rabba versus Rashi's view that the Chiddush of Rabba is tumah blua versus tumah beit hasdarim. Va'ubar b'chayak ishtei tabot damo. Wait a minute, why isn't the ubar and the midwife the equivalent of two rings? You have a fetus inside that is tamei, and you have the hand of the midwife that's inside that is tor, and now she's going to become tamei when she comes into contact with the fetus. But over there, it becomes tamala ubar l'chaya. And over there, the fetus is successful at giving its tumah, conveying its tumah to the midwife. Why is that different than two rings inside the individual, one tamei, one tor, and we say it's tor? The midwife sticks her hand in there, and now you have her hand and the baby internally, and yet the baby's able to convey tumah to her. And Rashi again says over here, Va'ubar v'chayak ishtei tabot damo, means we're going back to the suggestion that it's not because of tumah blua, but rather the reason the woman is Torah is because of tumat beit hasdarim. And then the Gemara is going to dispel that again. But for the Baalei HaTosafot who believe that even from the Mishnayot, we're not talking about tumat beit hasdarim, Tosfot says, El Tzarech Lamar Kidi Parashnu, that even though it's Tumah Blua, nevertheless the Chaya has the din like Shtei Tabot, and maybe Shtei Tabot are distinct from Tumah Blua, because Shtei Tabot are there together, it's not the external environment and the internal part of the woman that's doing the contact, it's two things internally, and we would have a Havamin over there, that those items are not protected by Tumah Blua. And Rabba's saying it is protected, but yet we're saying in the Mishnah that it's not protected. And that's the nature of the question according to the Baalei HaTosafot. So I'm a Rabba, Shani Ubar, home so full that Seit. And Ubar is different because in the end it's going to come out. Since in the end it's going to come out, we look at it or view it as if it's already out. So I'm a Rabba, Ubar so full that Seit. Tabat ain't so full that Seit. The Ubars are going to eventually come out. The ring isn't going to eventually come out. Even if you ingest something, eventually it's going to come out. Either you're going to throw it up, or you're going to defecate and it's going to come out. But either way, it's going to come out of you at some point too. Elohim Arova, Pumpadai, Yadei, Taima Da Milta. The Pumpadians know the reasoning behind this halacha. Umanu Rav Yosef. And who is that person from Pumpadai who knows the answer? It's Rav Yosef. Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Tumazo, Eina Mitivrei Torah. When the midwife comes into contact with the fetus, the fact that she is Tmeah is not a din d'oraita, ela midivrei sofrim. It's only a din d'rabbonon. My ena midivrei Torah, ela midivrei sofrim. So what does that mean? That it's not from the Torah, but it is only mid'rabbanan. So lo teima, adlibid Rabbi Akiva. Don't say that, this is according to Rabbi Akiva, tamar ubar b'mei isha tamei, and when you have a fetus inside of the woman, the fetus spits tamei. It conveys tumah, and it causes problems. Ela afilu Rabbi Yishmol, demar ubar b'mei isha tahor. According to Rabbi Yishmol, says that an ubar that's found in the mother's womb is tahor. Gazru ba tumah midrabanan. Even according to Rabbi Yishmol, there were goes there in the instance of the midwife that there is a din of tumah, even though it's internal to the woman. And it would be like shtei tabot, and it should not be a problem. Where it says, my time out. What was the reasoning behind this gzeira drabanan? Amarav Oshaya Gzera Shema Yotziv Vlad Rosha Chutz LePruzdor, because maybe the baby will actually exit the birthing canal when it exits the birthing canal, it's considered born. At that point, you no longer have either Tumat Beit Hasterim or Tumat Blu'a. And then it would be Mitameh the midwife. So if that's the case, that you're gozer by the midwife, you should be gozer by the mother as well. Because the same thing will happen when the head exits the woman. At that point, she becomes Tmeah because the fetus is a stillbirth. And therefore, it's conveying to Matameit. Where it says, Isha Margeshet Batzma. A woman who's birthing, she knows when the baby leaves and we're not to allow things to come into contact with it because she knows when it's crushed over that threshold. Where it says, with Batemel Al-Lachaya, why doesn't she just convey that information to the midwife? So then why doesn't she just tell the midwife that when she hits that threshold, don't touch it anymore, you're going to become Tmeah. Where it says, Triga. She's way too busy giving birth. Birthing is a traumatic process. It involves a lot of pain, activity. The woman is totally engrossed in the process of giving birth. She's not thinking about telling the midwife, don't touch it now because it came out. There's a problem of tumah. And again, Rashi the Shita Tov says over here, lo tema, don't say that the Mishnah is Rabbi Akiva. And therefore, the reason that the woman is Torah over here is because of Magab Beit Hasterim. Because that's what you would have thought again from Rashi, based on the Mishnayot. And don't say that, Ela Afilu Rabbi Shmuel, who says that the fetus doesn't convey Tumah at all, still the midwife over here is Tmeah, and therefore it's not a Dindo Raita, where it's Tumat Beit Hasterim versus Maga, where the midwife is touching the baby, and therefore she's Tmeah, and the woman who's carrying the baby is Maga Beit Hasterim, and therefore she is Torah. Rather, it's even according to Rabbi Shmuel, believes that the fetus internally is not Tameh. And even though it's not Tameh, and therefore when the midwife touches it, she shouldn't be Tmeah. Nevertheless, she is Tmeah. And that's all because of this Gzeirah, Shema Yotzi Avlad Et Rosho. And Rashi notes over here that Shema Yotzi Avlad Et Rosho is a problem of birth. Because once the fetus is born, then everybody agrees that there is Tumat Hameit. While the baby's inside, Rabbi Shmuel says there's no Tumat Hameit. Once it gets a classification of Yilod, of being born, then already it has a status of Tumat Hameit. And as Tosafot says, that's a Gzeirah D'Katuv. Because otherwise, even if the fetus stuck any limb out, it should be problematic. Because now once it's outside, it should have a din of Tumat Hameit. So Tosafot says that there is a Gzeirah D'Katuv, there's a postponement of Tumat Hameit until birth. And that's why the Rosh coming out is important. And because the Rosh might come out without the Chaya midwife being aware of it, she's going to become Tameh Tumat Hameit unbeknownst to herself. Therefore, we make her Tameh Midrabanan anytime she comes in contact with the fetus, even when it's internal to the woman, because maybe it wasn't internal. Or maybe she won't be so careful or notice the fact that it's no longer internal to the woman. And there she would be Tameh Tumat Hameit Midoraita. Now, as Rashi points out, this is distinct from the case of the Ro'eh before. When the shepherd stuck their hand in there, there we didn't say he became Tameh and there's no Gzeirah D'Rabbanan. That's because Rashi says the woman has a much longer birthing canal, and therefore you could make the mistake as to when the baby was or wasn't born. On the other hand, when it comes to a Ro'eh, the Rechem Shelah Galoy, by the Nebehima, the womb or the birthing process is very open. It's very clear to see, or easy to see, the fact that there is a change from not being born to being born. Now again, over here, the pruzdor that we're speaking about is not actually the little birthing canal, but the legs of the woman cover up the birth of the baby. Therefore, for the human beings, it's much harder to know exactly when that point of birth is. For animals where there's much more exposure, you can tell when there's a birth and when there's not a birth. Therefore, we don't need a gzeirah by the ro'ed that's touching the nevelah that's coming out, versus the case of the midwife, where we do need a gzeirah that she is tmeah when the baby is coming out because of that uncertainty as to the point of birth. All right, we're going to stop here, and the Gemara is going to continue tomorrow to explain to us what was that machloket Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Akiva with regards to an ubar that's found inside of the woman. Fifth lines down on the top of Ayin Bet, Amud Aleph.